Fearless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
The other night, I was out surfing on the internet, as I usually do periodically, and once again, I found an interesting page. I was very shocked when I first looked at this page because it said I could look at photographs of IGVs, and I did not know what an IGV was. So I went to that page and brought up a photograph of an IGV, and much to my amazement, there in front of me were disc shapes, looked like UFOs, hovering over airports and other places. And I thought to myself, what is this about? So I went back to the page and I looked carefully, and the page was about a gentleman named John Searle, who supposedly had been quite an interesting inventor in the past, is still alive, living in England. And, my goodness, I went through the page, I checked everything out, and finally came across the name of my guest, who was John Thomas. John Thomas has authored a book entitled Anti-Gravity, The Dream Made Reality, the story of John Searle. Now, John has a technical background in electricity and process control. He studied such topics as UFOs and ancient technology that has been lost or forgotten. Now, he's carried on the efforts of Mr. William Sherwood, who was the former Professor Searle's contact in the National Space Research Consortium. John Thomas, first contacted Professor Searle in 1990. Now, since that time, has printed and distributed these books. The one we're going to talk about today is The Law of the Squares, I believe. John has been the student of Professor Searle and has come to an understanding of the square technology, which we'll all find out about. It's the basis for the Searle effect generator, which is called the SEG, and the inverse G vehicle, the IGV, which I was telling you about. His book is a reflection of that learning process. And John Thomas is presently the vice president of the Direct International Science Consortium, which is DISC for short, and is the technical representative for Professor Searle. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
All right. Now, for those of you out there listeners, listen, you don't have to be rocket scientists. It sounded pretty complicated, but I assure you that this will be an interesting story. You don't need to be physicists in order to understand it. Certainly, I am not. So I was telling my listeners, as you heard, that I was out there surfing on the net. Now, is that your webpage?
Yes, it is. My son put it up, but I gave him all the information, of course, to put in there, and much of it came from Professor Searle himself.
Let's give out the, do you know the address, the web address by any chance?
But you can look at, you can find it by just searching for Searle or the Searle Effect, S-E-A-R-L.
S-E-A-R-L, or
right.
The S-E-A-R-L Effect.
Right.
Anyway, John, why don't you tell us a little bit of the story of how you first got involved in this technology, and maybe a little bit about what the technology is. Let's just start about your background first for a moment.
Well, I've been interested in this in ancient civilizations and UFOs and the unknown for quite some time, and through my interest led me to a group called the UFO Study Group of Rochester, and that was with William Sherwood and Rhoda Sherwood.
Yeah, I should tell people you are actually out in Rochester, New York.
Right.
Okay.
And so in looking at their material, they had put out newsletters for John Searle, a series of seven of them. And I was always interested in John and his work, and hadn't heard much about what was going on with him. I read all the newsletters and studied all the information that was available. And then one day I was saying to Bill, I said, gee, it would be really nice if I could get a hold of John and talk to him personally because I have so many questions. And he said, well, do you want his phone number? Which surprised me.
Because most of us think of these people like gods or something. You know, you can't know them or touch them or talk to them.
Right. Never expected them to have a phone number. And come to find out, he had been in hiding, kind of underground for a while besides, because of a problem he had earlier, which I can tell you about a little bit. But I called the professor, and I said, introduced myself, told him how I came to get his number and name so he wouldn't immediately turn him off. And he said, and I told him, I'm interested in your work, and my objective is to learn enough to duplicate your work. And I didn't know what to expect. Some people would say, oh, well, so do 100 other people, and hang up. But not John. John started telling me about his device and how it worked and about the law of the squares, and he's been telling me for 6 years. And it's been a tremendous learning process.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of John Searle.
Well, John was born to a quite poor family and brought up in a poor environment, so he never had any money or any resources. And during the course of his bringing up, he was put into a foster home, and then went to live with a landlady. At that point in his life, he was 14 years old. But prior to that, in the foster home, he had had a series of dreams, and the dreams came in pairs, first one, then the other, and then they came twice a year. And they repeated this for 4 years. And John, obviously at four and a half and 10 years old, did not know what they meant, but it made quite an impression on him. As he started to grow and learn more and decipher these dreams, he brought him to the age of 14 and a half at this landlady's apartment. And she had been listening to John and his ideas about the squares, and I'll tell you a little about that in a minute. But John had built a generator with the help of this landlady for funding. And the generator consisted of three rings and a number of rollers. And he put it on the kitchen table and had the coils all connected around it and started it up. And in order to start it, all he had to do was release one roller, and all the rollers started to turn. And this was a self-prime mover, so it required no fuel. And he was testing this to see just how much output he could get from it.
So our listeners need to know that what this thing basically was is this the device that everyone always hears about but says doesn't work.
Yes, it would be labeled perpetual motion and free energy and many other names by our patent office, unfortunately. But I guess John didn't know that you couldn't do it.
And that's why I like this story, because this is a beautiful example of the innocence of a child. He went ahead, acted on his dreams, which had information in them, and here he built this perpetual motion machine that created, what did it create?
Well, it creates voltage. It puts a voltage output.
Right, electricity.
Electricity.
Okay.
And he had as I said, he had this built according to his dreams with the specifications and by professionals in their field, such as the pressing agents that needed to be pressed, used for pressing the magnets, and coils winding for imprinting a field onto it. But he started this up, and then he put on an electric light bulb to see, you know, if it would accept the load, and then he put another one on, and then he put on a cooker, what he calls a cooker, and then he put on a teapot, and at that point, he's looking for this thing to stop and slow down and grind to a halt, because he keeps loading it up. Instead, it just keeps accepting the load, and it started to get colder, which was curious. And then it got very cold, and something happened then that he couldn't explain. The whole generator rose up to the ceiling and hit the ceiling, carrying all of the things that were plugged into it with it. And so he had no idea that this would happen. It completely surprised him. So he got a ladder, and he reached up, and he grabbed a hold of the framework and pulled it down far enough for his landlady to push a screwdriver in to stop the rollers, which it was miraculous that nothing broke, and it didn't damage anything, but it did stop it, and he was able to pull it down. And then they had to use water to get his hands off the device, because they had frozen to the framework. And so he said, well, this is no good. We can't have a generator that goes up to the ceiling. We want a good source of power. So what he did then is he put about a 2-inch thick piece of lead on the bottom of this generator and attached it to it. So he said, now, this will not move. And he repeated the experiment. This was on Christmas Eve, by the way. And He started it and loaded it up, and it took off, but this time it didn't stop. It went up through the kitchen ceiling, through the bedroom ceiling, through the roof, and it's still going, as far as we know, carrying the cooker and the lights and everything behind it.
So basically, there's a UFO out there traveling through space.
Yes. It should be quite a sight if someone ever comes across it. But that was his first experience, and things progressed from there, obviously, because he...
Okay, now let's just stop for a second and digest this. Now, what is your take on what he made here?
Well, what he did is he used what is called the law of the squares, and that to explain that would take a great deal of time, but I could give you a quick overview.
Okay, good. Do that.
The squares are a coherent number system that can reflect the use of power and the direction of power looking at a number matrix. A square usually is called by many people a magic square. You know, it's a 3x3 square that if you add any line up horizontally or vertically or diagonally, they all add up to the same number. You may have seen there's some games out like that.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. But John Searle's squares do the same thing, except their numbers are different than any other square I've ever seen. I've bought other books on these so-called magic squares and studied them, and none of them are the same as these squares. These squares show a production of power by showing a difference in forces up or in a direction. And they do that by examining the squares once they're corrected, we call it. There's three types of squares. There's a group one and a group two and a group three, and that and I could go into that if you'd like. But well, a group one square is any odd number square, like a 3 or 5, 7, 9. And a group two square is a even number square that's evenly divisible by 4. And a group two square is used to make the generator.
Okay.
And a group three square is a even number square that is not evenly divisible by 4, and that is used to make the inverse G vehicles, because that puts out a lot more voltage.
Okay, so these are laws?
These are the squares, and the law of the squares shows how the squares are corrected or made to reflect this power and to show it. And by comparing the numbers and the interface and the difference in these numbers is explained throughout the books and how they can relate to a force in a direction and how they can be shown. In book 5 of his series, and there are 14 in his series, all called The Law of the Squares, these books.
14 books.
14 books he's written since I've met him in 1990.
Prolific writer.
Yeah.
Now, are these 14 books that any scientist can purchase and read? Or
certainly, yes.
And do these explain how to do it?
Yes, they're in the
what
books.
What stops people? Okay, I know that when I ask you this question, I think I know already what the answer is, mm-hmm. but I'll ask it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What stops people, scientists, from investigating this type of power?
Well, primarily fear from ridicule and fear of their peers not respecting them because they are deviating from the norm and from the accepted method of scientific endeavor. If they go into anything that is even remotely called free energy or a perpetual motion type of a device, they're usually scorned.
Now, what about the one of the largest ways that people earn billions and billions of dollars is through selling energy.
Mm-hmm.
So are those people a threat to free energy? It would seem they would be.
Oh, I would say so. We have not had any problems whatsoever. I've heard horror stories and other stories from other people, other inventors, but we have had no problem at all. I can imagine that the power company, who is their whole basis for their income is selling power, and they do it usually through oil or a nuclear facility.
Now,
they may be threatened by this technology.
This is a good segue. Why don't you tell the story of what happened to John while he was married?
Yes, John had been working on this technology and married and living in a home that he was powering with his generator.
Now, about how old would you say he was at this point?
Well, that was back in 1982, and he's 64 now. He's a little math friend, probably in his late 40s.
Okay.
And so he had been powering his home with this generator for a total of about 30 years, from what I understand. And for some reason or another, the power company came to his home and said, you know, you're using more power than you're paying for, and we suspect that you're stealing power. And how they came to get to be made aware of this is still kind of a mystery. But they did come to his house, and they disconnected the power going to his mains, and he still had power. And then they dug up around his house thinking he must have an underground feed, and he still had power. And then they figured somehow he's getting it off the streetlights. At any rate, they arrested him and took him away. And while he was in being detained, they went to his home, and they tore out every bit of wiring in his home until they found the generator, which he had hidden in a wall. And they took it and have never returned it. At that point, John had been detained for a total of 10 months with no real formal charge, other than the judge saying that it was for his own good, whatever that meant, I guess. But he was detained for 10 months, and during that time, his wife did not really care for the technology and all the time it took from John. And so she asked the authorities if she could get rid of some of John's things. And the authorities said, well, you're his wife, you can do whatever you'd like. It's just as much yours as it is his. And so while he was in prison, she had everything he had burned, all his records, all his pictures, all the video. Well, there was no video then. There was movie film. Everything was burned, and some of it was taken to a dump. And when he came out of prison, his wife had moved away. He had nothing left. And that was the stop. That's what did actually stop him for a number of years.
Now, that's quite an unfortunate story, because sometimes, or at least usually, we find wives supporting their husbands. In this case, I guess she had been fed up with it or something?
Yes, it's unfortunate that she was like that, and I don't understand it. I don't think John really understands why she was. She benefited from this, and people and brought gifts to her that visited John and treated her well, along with John's children. But she did not like it for one reason or another, and decided that she was going to take things in her own hands, and did.
Now, is there any evidence that there are other SEGs or Searle effect generators around? Did anybody else get any of these?
Well, yes, they did. There was a man by the name of Reverend George Nicholson who was given one, a very small one, to operate as an electric typewriter at the time when he was doing some writing for John. There was another man by the name of Gordon Goodfellow. Gordon was interested in John's work and told him that he would really like to help, but his doctors told him that he only had a short time to live. And so John asked him, he said, well, what seems to be your problem? And he said, well, I have a lung ailment. I think it must have been silicosis. And he said that they can't do anything for me. And John said, okay. He said, come back in 3 days. And he had an emergency order put into the factory where he had the SEGs made, and he had a small SEG made for this man, and gave it to him. And as far as I know, this man's still around today, still alive. He did work with John on building Demo 1, which was one of the prototypes for the IGV.
Yeah, we're going to have to, unfortunately, there's so much to cover here, we're going to have to cover that fast, but what I'm asking is, so there are now there's a company that made the SEGs. Do any of those people have any of those left? Does anyone know?
No, because they all had them made according to John's specifications for John Searle. They never put them out as far as for sale themselves, so they really didn't have the entire process.
All right, so basically there's a technology then for a generator which can power, and I think people should understand that this thing, the more amperage load you put on it, mm-hmm. the more that it was able to power.
Yes, we have.
Which is the reverse of a normal generator, which would the more amps you put on it, the less efficient it becomes until it finally stops producing power.
Right. Now, of course, there is a limit. We're planning on building now will power a home. We estimated about 200 amps at 220 volts. You don't want to exceed that because you don't want to have the same thing happen to you as it happened to John.
In other words, that your house flies off or...
Right. You don't want it to go airborne.
Now, why does it become airborne?
Well, that's an interesting phenomenon. What happens is, as the load increases on the generator speeds up to try to meet that load. And when it does, it puts out a very high voltage. And as the unit keeps speeding up to try to meet that load, the voltage gets higher and higher. And that, in turn, pushes the air away from the machine, which causes a vacuum. And the vacuum also generates a numbing cold. And it has been measured in some of his experiments that the cold goes down to about 4 Kelvin, which is very close to absolute zero.
Right, that's almost absolute zero, and that's where everything becomes superconductive.
Superconductive. At that point, we believe the entire unit becomes superconductive, and it generates its own gravitational field.
Hmm.
And that gravitational field is in opposition to the Earth, so it is repelled by the Earth.
Now, without jumping to the IVG, the IGV, I mean,
mm-hmm.
inverse G vehicle,
right.
Is this the premise?
Yes, that's the same premise.
So inverse, does G stand for gravity then?
Right.
So it's an inverse gravity vehicle.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
This is very exciting, John, and I'd love to stay with the SEG, but let's move to the IGV.
Right, right. I think you're right. And that's the first units he ever built were funded by a man that he was living with at the time, and his name was George Haynes. And George was a man dying of cancer, and he believed in John and believed in what he was hearing about the theories, and he said... can you build this? And he said, yes. He said, will it make people look up? He said, well, yeah, they'll look up, all right. And he said, I'm so tired of seeing people looking down at their feet and looking down at the street all the time. If it'll make them look up, I'll pay for it. You build it. So John
That's
went
an
ahead
interesting
and,
concept. Because people certainly look up at these things.
They did.
Yeah.
Well, the first ones that he built had some unfortunate side effects. He didn't know how to control them. Second of all, when it started to rise, they hovered at about 50 feet, and then they gained in power. And at that point, they put out a tremendously strong electromagnetic wave that turned on radios, even if they weren't plugged in full blast.
So it did the same kind of things that UFOs supposedly do,
right?
Which is to affect electricity somehow.
And I'll move real quickly. There's a whole long story about that. But I'll move right on. That he did find a way to control it.
All right. Before you do that, I want to ask. If we don't get them all in, we'll at least stick with these two.
Okay.
Let me ask you this: the pictures that are on the web.
Mm-hmm.
These look like UFOs. What you're saying is these are discs that were built by. Or for John Searle.
Yes. Now, all the pictures on the disc, some are illustrations. I'm not trying to say that everything on that web page is an actual photograph. It obviously is not.
Okay.
These are computer-generated images.
Oh, they are.
Some of them. Show what we would envision the future looking like. Of a disc coming down in an airport and docking right next to a 747. Instead of people saying, oh my God, it's UFOs and it's an invasion,
right, okay.
They'll say, okay.
Because when I first looked at it, I said to myself, now wait, what am I looking at here?
Right.
I wasn't sure whether I was looking at, some of them did look like they were computer enhanced, but then again, these days it's hard to tell the difference sometimes.
There is a note. It may not be as highly visible as it could be, I guess. There's a note saying that which ones are illustrations.
Okay. All right,
but
so,
we do have photos that were taken by the press of the craft in flight.
All right, now let me ask you this. Did anybody ever go in this inverse G vehicle, fly it? Okay, so they were always powered remotely?
Yes.
And obviously that's because if you got in this thing and it got going, it'd be the end, right?
Well, no.
It would take you into hyperspace.
Well, if you didn't, now, of course, we know how to control them. But at one time, they didn't. There was an interesting story concerning that a radio announcer, similar to yourself, saw the Demo 1, which was a 27-foot craft. And he said he wanted to have John let him get inside this and have him remote control it into the middle of a stadium and have him get out as a joke. And he begged him to do it, but John obviously refused because he said, I don't have any life support system in this.
Right.
And he said, well, I could wear an oxygen tank and I'd be fine. Well, you wouldn't be, because it forms a vacuum inside it also.
So right now, or at least at that point, it was dangerous for humans to...
Oh, it was impossible without a life support system, and the life support system was so expensive that it couldn't be built at that time.
Now, how about now?
Now, well, we're looking for funding and people who want to build this. I've approached people like the government, NASA, the mm-hmm. Department of the Navy, and our president. A craft today to build would not be anywhere near what even a jet fighter would cost. We could build it for a lot less money, and it will do a lot more. It would literally fly rings around an F-16, literally.
Now, with that in mind, how exactly does the IGV work?
Okay, the IGV is a slender disc. It looks like about a classic UFO, except there's no dome on it, because that would generate heat. It has along its perimeter, it has an SEG, a serial effect generator, only it's made specially for the craft. And so you are in the middle of the generator itself, and when you are in the cabin. There's a series of flight cells, and these flight cells can be charged, at the top or the bottom. They're also able to be swiveled, and that is your steering device and also a control device so you don't fly off into space. This unit, when it goes into operation, is completely enclosed in a magnetic field and a gravitational field, which is impervious, by the way, to anything. And
impervious means that it's like a cloaking shield? Or
well, no, it means you won't let anything through it. It's like a force field.
And does that mean that it's you would be unable to shoot it down?
That's true. You could not.
So, are you sure we're going to be able to get through this show without two governments coming in?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm not hiding. I've been trying to get a hold of somebody from the government.
My goodness, obviously either nobody believes you or nobody has heard you. It's one of those two, but there's
no
other possibility here.
Well, here's another one for the government. It's also invisible to radar.
Well, I thought that immediately. It can actually be invisible optically, I guess, too.
It could be, but in this case, right now, I don't believe it is. Optically, you can see it, but you can't see it on radar because the radar waves are absorbed.
But, my guest, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio is the show. My guest is John Thomas. He has authored a book entitled Anti-Gravity, The Dream Made Reality. It's the story of John Searle, who we are talking about right now. We've talked about the SEG, which is the Searle Effect Generator, which
right.
makes electricity and so on and so forth. We have talked about the IGV, which is kind of like a flying disc. I hope that you have a willing suspension of disbelief, because we're going to go forward from now. We've talked about the SEG, which stands for the Searle Effect Generator, which is a generator that essentially makes electricity out of nothing for free and continues to make it. And the more of a load you put on it, the more it makes the electricity. And one of the effects that has occurred from that, according to John Thomas, is that once it has been pushed as hard as you can push it, it begins to literally go so fast, it becomes cold, it creates a vacuum, it creates its own gravity field, and literally begins to take off, which created then the way to make a vehicle called the inverse G vehicle, which is the inverse gravity vehicle. Looks very much like a flying saucer. And so that's where we are. John, we were about to continue. So what is being currently done on these projects?
Well, Bruce, we have the professors come over to the United States and gave two lectures. As far as I know, those are the only two we ever gave in the United States. And they were at the New Energy Conventions in Colorado Springs and the International Tesla Society. And at the New Energy Symposium, we were staying at a hotel prior to the symposium called the Stanley Hotel. And it so happened that at the same time they were making a movie at this hotel. And they made it all over and called it the Newbery. And it was the name of the movie was The Dumb and the Dumber.
I remember that, Dumb and Dumber, yeah.
Right. And so during the course of staying there, I happened to be on the front porch, and we ran into some of the people that came out that had been on the cast, and we met a fellow by the name of Brad Lockerman. And Brad is with Marilyn Lewis Entertainment, and they are producers. And we got to talking to Brad, and I introduced him to John Cyril, and Brad was astounded at the account of the technology and what could be done with it.
Just like I am at this point, and certainly the listeners, right?
And we got to be quite good friends, and Brad has read many of the books and looked at the material, and he has since contracted for the rights to do a documentary and a full-length motion picture on John Cyril. So this is a step in the right direction, and by that I mean that our primary interest is to build. Publicity is all right, and if it goes to a movie, that may even help as far as finding the people to build.
Right, but funding is what it's all about, isn't it?
Funding is what it's all about. I imagine that's not a new story for many, many people out there that have inventions and ideas.
Hey, look, it's not a new story for me either. I'm out there trying to get funding to keep my show on the air, so yeah.
Would have been it. But what we're looking for is a manufacturer that wants to do this. It sounds like it should be no problem at all. But we are in the process now of rebuilding a prototype. And it's taken this long because of the same old story. We don't have the funding, and the materials are expensive, and the process is not cheap. But we do have some dedicated individuals who have helped us and who are building today, and we have building going on in Australia and in England and in the United States and in Germany. And we are all in different stages, but all working together trying to get the prototype, which will be a ring and rollers going around it. At that point, of course, getting the funding would probably be much easier.
Now, without creating any controversy, which certainly I do anyway, but without suggesting there's a conspiracy, how much money do you think it's worth to the oil producers to have the shuttle run by rocket fuel versus not having to use that?
Well, I can see the point. Obviously, the oil companies want to see oil used and for heating, for the rockets system, for the shuttle program. But sooner or later, and I think it's going to be sooner than later, because the world is realizing that it's time to move ahead. We have been kind of subdued and held back by companies such as the oil companies for many, many years and supporting them. And people realize there must be a better way, and this is one of the better ways. I think it's going to be a battle at first, but I really believe that down line, the oil companies, as well as others, will join in and see that they can use, buy, and redistribute this power or these units themselves.
All right, now when we talk about, and you mentioned the Tesla Society, the problem that Tesla had was while he was funded by J.P. Morgan, the biggest problem that came up was when he created his famous tower that would deliver electricity for free to everyone. J.P. Morgan shut it down because he said, how do I make money from this thing? So, I mean, one of the biggest problems with getting investors is they're trying to figure out how do they make money from this, for example, the SEG. I mean, my goodness, a person goes out and buys that and they use it for the rest of their lives and never have to pay a cent for energy.
Mm-hmm.
So how does you'd have to charge $1 million for the thing
You'd think so, but...
I'm making a joke about it, but I'm saying I can understand why people are probably not so enthused. I mean, after all, J.P. Morgan's enthusiasm was the fact that he was creating essentially a multi-level, pyramid marketing deal where once you started using it, you had no choice but to continue, and you could never stop. I mean, it's the most incredible setup in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But with these things... I can see how the manufacturers are saying to themselves, well, what's in it for me?
Right, and it's not a...
I mean, it's a greedy...
There's no obsolescence built into this.
It's a greedy concept, right? I figure there's no obsolescence.
And we are not... And because our economy and just about the whole world is based on a greed concept, then we are very much different than that.
But I look at the... I don't want to keep pursuing this, but I just want to say I look at the economics and I say, okay, now, number one, I'm all for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also say, in talking to you about it and seeing the vision, I can see exactly what this does to the world economy. I realize that the world economy can change, but look at what happened in California when we went from being a warring nation to being a less than warring nation, let's say, mm-hmm. where we no longer make our money on war goods. The state of California has literally taken the brunt of an incredible change because we used to be a war state, a state right. that made all of its money from...
Isn't that a shame that we have to say, well, gee, we're not at war, so therefore our economy goes down. So war must have been a good thing.
Well, I'm not. I don't think I'm. Well, I know I'm not saying that, what I'm pointing out mm-hmm. is that innocent people who didn't really realize what they were doing. Let's face it. A person becomes an electrical engineer, and the only job he could get was with. I don't want to mention
a fast
any names.
Food chain, maybe.
No. I'm just saying the only job that he could get would be with the you know the companies that made war type devices.
Right.
Okay, and then the man the guy works there for 15 or 20 years, making $100,000 a year. All of a sudden, where we no longer make war type weaponry and things like that, and now he's out of a job, not because he's not talented, but because he spent his entire life learning how to run these things.
Well, Bruce, this is the tip of the iceberg. Free energy, supposedly, or a generator that will power your home that you don't have to put any fuel into, sounds like, well, this is a major threat to our economy, but it's the tip of the iceberg. There's so many things that this generator can be used for.
Well, I'm not saying it's a... I'm saying it's a threat to the world economy.
Well, the world economy, but this...
I'm not talking about the state, the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I am not saying it's not good. I'm all for it. I'm just mm-hmm. saying I can understand why you're having trouble getting backing, because I can see that people who understand how things work, how things are interrelated, realize that this is the tip of the iceberg. Of course, what you've got here is the tip of the iceberg.
There's two ways, that, as far as like a manufacturer say, okay, well, I make these things and I sell them and then they don't break down and I don't have to sell them more and I don't have to give them fuel, so there's the end of the market. But there's the market is probably billions of sales. And also, there are cities involved. Now, in a city, everyone in an apartment's not going to have one of these.
Well, I know that a city can go out and buy one, and then they can power the city and make money on it. I understand that.
Yeah.
but that's not really what people want. I mean, it seems to me this thing has been set up so that everyone can be literally autonomous.
It is. You could take one of these units and also install it in an automobile. There's another
well, of
big
course.
Group that's going to come again.
And isn't that what Tesla did? He went, he drove his car all over the place. Well, not all over the place, but he drove in the first electric car with the electricity coming from his tower to prove that it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, again, another problem because, as I said, J.P. Morgan looked at it and he goes, how
do
I make money out of this?
Because we've messed up our atmosphere and our ecology so bad. The laws are changing. Now we have to have electric cars by a certain year, and we have to have cut our pollution down by so much. And this is not really because everybody's nice and everybody's interested in the ecology. It's more of survival. We're polluting our planet so bad that we're really jeopardizing our survival. So they're forced to go to these new types of devices and electric cars and high efficiency carburetors. This is an answer to that problem. We could have an electric car that was not only capable of taking you anywhere you want to go for as long as you want to go, but you could take it out, say, in the country. Take a couple of leads off it, hook it to your house, and run your house on it.
All right, so I can see this little package that people carry around that runs everything. Let's go away from the economy stuff for a second because see it changes the world. But let me ask you this: what do you think this thing is going to cost to make startup? Let's talk about the what do you think it'll cost to make a prototype that can be shown?
Right now, I'm estimating around $50,000.
That's all.
Yeah,
there are people that spend $50,000 on dinner. Well, certainly in L.A. Anyway, that's how I feel sometimes
now
when I go out.
That's for the prototype generator. Now, of course, the flying craft would cost quite a bit more.
Oh my goodness! If you could just make the generator fly once in a while, it'll be good enough.
Well, on the flying side, there's a lot of possibilities too. We're looking at. How much does it cost to put up a satellite? We could put those up, maybe six a day.
Right, because you don't have to have all this equipment. Like one person can be manning a station anywhere. It doesn't have to be over by the coasts because there's no possibility of crashing and so on and so forth.
There's also the speed that we never discuss, and how fast does this IGV go?
Yeah, how fast can it go?
It can. Once it gets up, we take it up slowly, so you don't collapse buildings, and then you can go anywhere in the world in a half an hour.
And that's because of what reason?
That's because it uses the speed that the Earth is traveling through the universe, and the solar system is traveling. It uses that to propel it to almost the speed of, I mean, it could go close to the speed of light. But you could take this much slower than that.
Now, I suppose it can go faster than the speed of light because it probably, first of all, doesn't adhere to most of the physics anyway.
It may be. We cannot even discuss that yet because it's down line and it will be tested. But it may even exceed that. But that's something we have to test later on.
John, we're getting close to the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So before that happens, let me just say to you, if people want to find out more about Professor Searle mm-hmm. and his work, what can they do?
The best thing to do would be to contact me directly because I'm the publisher and all the books and all the information comes directly from me. There's a videotape of Professor Searle's 1989 lecture, which is very informative.
Are there any?
He explains his technology. So,
any pictures of the machine left, or none of those?
Well, there are some pictures in the videotape. This is about a four-hour tape that John Searle got together, and from footage that he had recovered from other people, borrowed, and then had to return. And there are pictures of his photo album with some of the craft in flight and different building stages of Demo 1. So yes, there are pictures in there. There's no pictures of it, no moving pictures of it in flight. We're still trying to recover some of those. And I don't know how much time we got, but there was a group that came over to England to see the Stonehenge and stopped to see John do a demonstration instead and took a lot of footage. And we were trying to locate any of those people. They were from the United States. They were tourists. And they did take a lot of pictures and a lot of movies. And if we could find any of those, we'd be very grateful.
This was before 1982?
Yes.
Wow, so we're looking for vintage photos
yes.
that someone might have that will show this vehicle in motion?
Right, and because there were people there with movie cameras, and they did take movies of the craft taking off and maneuvering.
John, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, Bruce.
This was just great, and we're going to get John Searle now to be on the show next. That's going to be the next... choice here, and we'll try to put that together before October for all of our listeners here.
Oh, great. I'll let them know that you'll be in contact with them.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
And have a good day.
Same to you.
All right. And have a really good week, everyone.